You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer.
Where readers and writers meet and story is everything.
We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Jean Bell.
And that opening music was Hot Texas, written and performed by our good friends Alex Dormont and the Hot Texas Swing Band. My toes were tapping. Were your toes tapping?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So who's our guest tonight?
Our guest. Great. Jane Denen Ferrer. She's the author of 5 collections of poetry, a nonfiction book about games, and now a novel, Haley and the Hot Flashes. She's a native Floridian. Jane now lives in Greenville, North Carolina, where she enjoys reading, hiking, gardening, and old movies. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you. My toes were tapping, too. One collection, I'm from Greenville, South Carolina.
Oh, what did we say? Uh-oh.
Greenville, North Carolina. But
oh, I'm South Carolina. We have relatives in North Carolina.
That's why. So sorry.
No problem.
So, Jane, we're so happy to have you with us. And we both read this book, and we absolutely enjoy. We were talking.
It's a lot of fun.
We were talking about it all week, and he'd be read a little ahead of me, and he'd tell me, and I'd say, no, don't tell me. And then we'd catch up, and then I'd read a little ahead, and very fun. So you're a gentleman, but would you say men should read this book?
Absolutely. Well, you guys out there, don't be thrown off by the title. It's a fun read. It's about the music industry. It's about old friends who grew up together in high school and are going through the mid-50s. Even we guys understand what going through the mid-50s is. It's a lot of fun. There's some dark corners in the story. It's not all fun and games, but it's very humorous. You will enjoy it.
So now we've told you a little bit about the book. But we're going to start, Jane, talking a little bit about poetry, because that's near and dear to your heart. So let's talk about poetry for a few minutes.
That is. I can remember I was blessed to grow up in a small town, and our church had a full-time librarian, and she introduced me to Robert Louis Stevenson when I was about 5 years old. And so I've loved poetry since my earliest days. And especially as I've written in lots of different genres, freelance writing, magazine articles. But when I was raising my children, poetry was a wonderful medium to work in because, you know, you had those short spurts of time. So I did, my first book was A New Mother's Prayers. And after my third child was born, we had A Mother of Sons. And then as soon as that book came out, my publisher was like, well, we need something for mothers of daughters. It's like, how can I write something about daughters? I don't have one. He said, well, you are a daughter and you have a mother. Surely that's something to work with. So I did Dancing with My Daughter. My mom by that time had Alzheimer's, so there was a complete role reversal. Yeah. And the latest book is Poems to Lift You Up and Make You Smile, which is an anthology of what I call the best of my poetry website, yourdailypoem.com.
Go ahead and tell us a little bit more about that website and how you choose what to post there. Just tell us more about that.
Well, I started that back in 2000 and after a discussion with my brother-in-law and my brother, who said, poetry is boring, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, you just haven't read the right poetry. So I started out every April for, from 2000 to 2009, I sent out a poem a day every April for National Poetry Month.
Yes.
Until I had convinced them that, yes, there was poetry worth reading. And in 2009, I had so many people who had requested, please do this, send this every day. So I launched in, and never in my wildest dreams did I imagine that 13 years later, I would still be sending out a poem every day. Classic and contemporary poets, some well-known, some never published before. The criteria is that it has to make you have a reaction. It has to make you laugh, has to make you think. I didn't start out to be the Pollyanna of poetry venues, but I discovered that my audience really liked poems that lift you up and make you smile. So that's kind of where, you know, that's the format. Mm-hmm. And it's been a lot of fun, but like I said, I never imagined it would have the run that it has.
So I'm curious, do you post every day, or are you able to, like, you know, post a week at a time, and this, and your website, you know, you're able to schedule it out? I mean, that's quite a commitment.
It is. Typically, yeah. I post every day. I mean, every afternoon, every night, the day before.
Okay.
You know, if I'm out of town on vacation or something, I'll do several days in advance. But I really like being able to monitor. You know, people make comments. I do everything I can to, you know, screen spam and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I just kind of like to keep my fingers on it. So it's definitely been a commitment. But it's been so much fun. I've got probably over 400 different poets represented now, and over 4,000 poems.
Yeah. That's so fantastic. We know a number of Western poets, men and women, cowboy poets, and some aren't really they're writing about the Western poetry form, are not necessarily coming from cowboy or ranching traditions, but have a love for the West. And I remember in April, there was always a week devoted to cowboy poetry. And I can recall a couple of months where I was trying to post on our Rendezvous with a Writer page every day about a poet that we knew. And I thought, that'll be so simple. And at the end of the month, I was like, oh, April's done for this year. So I congratulate you. If any of our listeners are poets or have poetry they'd love to submit to you, how would they do that?
Just send it to, the guidelines are on the page, the homepage, yourdailypoem.com. And if you look under About Us, the guidelines are listed there for, you know, what we like. Short, uplifting poetry, basically. And it's been interesting. I do a lot of theme weeks during the course of the year. We haven't done a cowboy poetry, but we should, because I've got several cowboy poets, Daryl Arnold, Mike Mutu, Mike Logan. So that would be a great theme week to do.
Well, I will, I will get the word out. Now, besides poetry in your background, you also did some journalism, and part of what we're going to talk about shortly, the book Haley and the Hot Flashes, you hit a bit of, we know you have a bit of country music in your background. You want to touch on that for a moment?
Yeah. I have my first cousin is Mel Tillis. And so I grew up, you know, hearing his music, going to his concerts, going on the bus, getting a chance to talk with his band members. And then my brother was a booking agent in Nashville, for several years. And the summer that I was 16, I lined up a job with the Tampa Tribune, and I got to interview, various country music stars, which was just a dream come true. And fortunately, they were nice enough to take me seriously. I was very serious as a writer, but, you know, you don't normally get a teenager running an interview for you. But they were very gracious, and I made some connections there and just got a good taste of that lifestyle and kind of what that's like. So that's always been just an area that I really enjoy focusing on. But my family is musical, and so that's something that's always kind of a background. So felt kind of natural to be writing about that.
Right. I think Randy Travis, you interviewed Randy. Was Randy Travis one of the people that you interviewed?
You know, Randy Travis wasn't around back when I was 16.
I don't know why I was thinking that.
I interviewed Travis. Kenny Rogers and Jeannie Seeley. Tried my best to get Marty Robbins, and he was not interested. Ray Stevens, I had just a wonderful
and
were very gracious, and it was a thrilling time for me, and had a wonderful editor at the Champa Tribune who supported me in that.
Right. It's not quite time to take our first break yet. Our first ad. Do you have a question? Question that you want to ask?
I don't at the moment. I'm ready to talk about the book.
Know what? I'm sure that Sam with LA Talk Radio is probably listening in. If you are, Sam, why don't we go ahead and listen to a word from Richard Polinelli with Tuscany Bay Books.
Hey, everybody. Richard Polinelli with Tuscany Bay Books. And if you're a reader looking for the next best adventure for your summertime reading or coming up on the winter, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com and check out our amazing bookshelf filled with books by some of the best authors out there in science fiction, fantasy, mystery thrillers, westerns, you name it. We've got something for you to read. And if you're an author who has just finished your manuscript and you're looking for a publisher, come to TuscanyBayBooks.com. Fill out our submission form. We'll take a look at it and we'll see if we can get you published and get you doing what you should be doing, which is writing your very next book. TuscanyBayBooks.com, that's your place to go if you're a reader or a writer. And now back to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell.
Good evening. We're here with Jane Jardin Farrar. We're interviewing her regarding her poetry and her books, and assuming maybe some of you just turned in, but we want to talk about her number one book right now, Alien Hot Flashes. Jane, what inspired you to write this book?
Well, part of it, as I explained, was my interest and experience with country music. So that was there. But I think what prompted it is there are just not a whole lot of books out there that portray older women in a positive light.
Okay.
And I like to read stories about small towns with happy endings and older, wiser women. And I thought, I may just have to write this. I started out, this began as a lark with a friend of mine. And she went on a whole different path and kind of lost interest in the project. And I fell in love with these characters and said, you know, do you care if I continue with this? Because I really am having fun with this. So, I don't know if you write yourselves, but editing is the key of successful writing. And so I did probably about 6 rewrites before I was happy with it. And ended up having to cut a lot. My publisher wanted to be shorter than it was, so did a lot of editing and heart-rending slashes through that process. But I thought the idea of doing something for older women that portray them in a positive light with, you know, reminding people that it's not your age that matters, it's your attitude. And, you know, just because you're gotten past a certain milestone doesn't mean that you have to give up your dreams and the things that you were interested in once upon a time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's very true. And obviously you bring in some things that happen in people's lives, not necessarily talking about going through a change of life, but there's a lot of things that can't happen to you as you go down the road. And how do we deal with them, and can we deal with them? And you bring some of those things up, and you do a nice job of handling that.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Do you have a question?
I'm getting maybe to another question, but I was saying I thought you did a nice job of handling a lot of problems in life that occur besides going through a change. There's a lot of things that go on with your characters in the book that you handle very well, and bringing out how they react to things that occur in their life that are not positive.
Well, thank you. And it's like very few of us go through life without encountering one obstacle after another. And it's, you know, I think that's why friendship, which is a major factor in the book, friendship is so important because that's how we get through those rough times, with a strong faith and a strong network of people to support you when you're going through those hard times. And, you know, I looked for things as I was developing the characters. You know, one of the women is a housewife She has twins at home, and it doesn't go into detail, but you know, that was a challenge for her to have those twins. Another one has, you know, got pregnant in high school, you know, had a divorce, and things just have not turned out the way she wanted them to. The main character, without giving away plot points, she's on her own after a rather stormy start in her life. So all of these women are dealing with something, whether it's situations that they don't have any control over, or, you know, and the one there's illness, you know, you've got menopausal issues that people are dealing with, and that affects every woman differently. So you either make peace with it or you become miserable. So again, you go back to those friends to, you know, what have you tried? What, you know, what do you do when you get this way? Or, again, it's about the connection and the bonds between us.
Let's talk about those characters a little bit more for a moment, if we can, because the cast of characters is so fun. Mm-hmm. And there are some quirky ones. We don't want to do spoiler alerts, but there are some twists and turns. Some of the characters, you know, are minor, but they're major because they play big roles. Tell us a little bit about, I'm just going to throw out some names. Okay. Tipsy Mac. I want to meet Tipsy. Tell me about Tipsy.
Tipsy is kind of a father stand-in for Haley. That's her manager who discovered her when she was singing at a local festival when she was in high school. And she was the biggest name on his roster for the long time. But now it's been 10 years since she's had a hit. So she's kind of dead weight, and everybody's encouraging him to, you know, dump her and move on. And he won't do it because that sense of loyalty is there. I think it's interesting that Jim enjoyed the book. There are a lot of male characters in the book, so I can see where you know, could find some people to kind of bond with. But Tipsy is just and you know, with a name that just kind of came and it's like he doesn't drink at all, but he just kind of sways back and forth, and so that's what earned him the name Tipsy. And who else?
Well, one of my favorites you introduced right in the beginning, and that's Bubba Trout.
I love Bubba Trout. When I envision Bubba, I think of Cheech Marin back in the 70s and 80s, in his Cheech and Chong days. And he's got a sense of humor. He doesn't tolerate foolishness. He gets things done. Bubba is Haley's handyman, Gal Friday kind of thing, takes care of all the things that she needs so she doesn't have to worry about routine everyday things. And he's the kind of guy you can always depend on. And yeah. I have a chance later, I may get a chance to read an email that he sends to Haley.
Oh, you know what? Oh, do you want to read that now? Since
sure.
We just talked about him, let's do that.
Okay, they are on the road. Haley and the girls are on the road. Bubba is back in Nashville holding down the fort. And there are some things that have happened that he's trying to make them aware of. So he sends this email to Sister Sarah at HaleySwift.com from Tennessee Trout at HaleySwift.com. Subject, I do not get paid enough for this. Dear AWOL employer, did you fall off a bus or what? I've left you 14 messages. Are all the cell towers below the Mason-Dixon broke down? Code red. Rhett Wilson has gone missing. His parole officer called Tipsy to tell him he didn't check in yesterday, and when the police went to his apartment, he wasn't there. His car was gone, and neighbors said they haven't seen him in a couple of days. We've already notified security at the Orange Blossom Opry and the police in Weirsdale and Ocala, but you need to be careful. I gave the police chief down there your cell number. Of course, you're not answering it, so I'm not sure why I bothered. Yes, Dr. Boy's in a snit because Tipsy called him trying to get hold of you, and when he found out what was going on, he started to come after you, but Tipsy told him to stay put and not get in the way, so he called me to complain, and then Tipsy called me to complain, and now they're both mad and worried sick and driving me crazy. Would you please answer your dang phone? P.S.S. Suzette thinks you take me for granted and says I should get a raise. I don't think you take me for granted, but how about a raise anyway? You're starting to be high maintenance. Call me.
Oh, and we have the cast of characters. You know, we have the girls next door who become the hot flashes, mm-hmm. and we have Roadkill, and it's quite a combination. How did you come up with those names for the groups?
Well, the girls next door, obviously, when you're 53, that's hard to pull off the image of the girls next door. So one of the band members says, no way are we going out like that. We got to be Haley and the Hot Flashes. So that seemed to fit that situation.
Yeah.
Roadkill, I just wanted something different. That's the backup band for Haley. And they've been together with her for years, playing with her. And Tipsy thinks one of the reasons they can't get a solid, have moved on to a bigger role is because of their name.
That name.
Yeah. Because of their name. And they're a very talented group of musicians. I mean, all of the time that Haley was still performing, but her backup group had gone on to, you know, other things in their lives. Roadkill was, they were performing over all that time.
Right. Well, they've been a house band. They've done everything. They tour as backup. So they have stayed busy all those years, but they just never quite hit the spotlight. You know, they didn't make the change from like being the opening act to the stars.
Right. And of course, our heartthrob is Jack. Jack Bisbee. Oh my gosh. I'm having a hot flash right now.
He is just a pragmatic, no nonsense kind of guy. You know, he's got a great voice. He plays great guitar. But he doesn't tolerate any foolishness. And the rest of the band, the rest of Roadkill, is a mix. You've got Graham Frazier, who's the fiddler, who is always on the move. And you've got Pinky, who is the keyboard player, who is a devout Christian young man and serious about his work, serious about his life, serious about his piano. Willard is the bass player, and Bo is the drummer, who shares a lot of similarities with Graham. So Jack kind of has to pull them all in line once in a while.
Yeah. And then the other fun thing is you bring in other things that go around this kind of world, like the Red Hat ladies, the Red Hat, what's the actual term? Red Hat Society, Red Hat ladies.
Red Hat Society, yeah.
And the fan club, you know, the power of the fan club.
Right. That's a very real factor for people who, you know, who are celebrities. You know, they have to deal with all of this and on a regular basis, whether they want it or not. I think, you know, that would be a challenge to get, you know, you can't ever just go out for a hamburger and be left alone. So somebody, some Red Hat is going to corner you, or some fan club president is going to come, you know.
Speaking of hamburgers, there's a restaurant, there's a eatery that comes up quite often, the Dairy Dip. Tell us about the Dairy Dip.
That's a local ice cream. Well, in most of the small towns that I've known, there's always a hangout for everybody.
Yeah, okay.
And in Scary, South Carolina, which is the fictional town that all these girls are from, it's the Dairy Dip, who is famous for their chili cheese fries and their dip cones, and has been the scene of many things over the years. And so this is the first place when Haley comes back to town, they all make a run for the Dairy Dip. So it's just one of those places that's near and dear to your heart, no matter how long you've been away.
Right, right. Let's see. You know, Bernie was another character that I liked, and he's, I think, the chauffeur. Do you have that? They have a wonderful conversation, Haley and Bernie.
Yeah, Bernie is Tipsy's chauffeur, limousine driver. And when Haley decides, when she signs up for this gig to go back to her hometown, Tipsy can't go with her. He's got too much going on. So as kind of a gift, he sends Bernie to drive her down there. And Bernie is, again, kind of a father figure. So let me see here.
And Haley's in a bit of a quandary at this moment in the book, has some hot flashes about.
Yeah, she has mixed feelings about going back. She loves her friends, she loved her hometown, but she has a lot of bad memories there as well. Mm-hmm. So, she's talking to Bernie and she says, I didn't exactly stay in touch with my friends here in Scary Bernie. I'm kind of embarrassed to be coming back after not paying anyone much attention all these years. What if they don't like me anymore? What if they've asked me here just to gloat now that I'm down on my luck? I truly care about these people. I never meant to ignore them. It's just, well, there are a lot of bad memories here along with the good. I meant to come back. I meant to stay in touch, but I was so glad to get away. And then, I don't know, time just disappeared. Years disappeared. She looked up with tears in her eyes. I don't know how to handle this, Bernie. The man scratched his chin and straightened his cap before speaking. Miss Haley, he finally said, you've been all over the world, singing to folks old and young, working your tail off since you was just a kid. You sung for sick people, for soldiers, for queens and presidents. You can go up these steps. This ain't nothing to be afraid of. This is home. Haley looked up at the night sky and tried to ward off the tears that wanted so badly to flow. That's just it, Bernie. These people know what I really am. All the sequins and makeup in the world don't hide the fact that I was cheap white trash with a song and a prayer. You might have been poor, little girl, but you weren't trash. You were a good girl, raised to live right and love the Lord no matter what happened or didn't. Wave that then as a long time ago and needs to be laid to rest. Mm-hmm. Bernie put a hand on Haley's shoulder and looked straight into her brooding, troubled eyes. Now you listen to old Bernie. You go in there and get yourself a good night's sleep. Then tomorrow, you put on your best Sunday go-to-meeting clothes. You paint that pretty face like Jesus was coming. And you walk into that fancy party with your head held high. Somebody wanted you here bad enough to pay you to come home. Then you sing your heart out. And any people who've been thinking bad about you, once you commence to sing, is going to remember how proud they are you came from their hometown. And how maybe they had a hand in making you famous. And how they want to see you twinkling back up there with the stars where you belong. Old Bernie's predicting this time tomorrow night, most of Scary's going to be standing in the gym cheering that fool head off. We can make a small wager on that if you care to.
That's wonderful. The book has lots of great dialogue. I know we're not quite, well, let's go ahead and talk a little bit about process and then we're going to take a quick break. Tell us, there's a lot of great dialogue. Is dialogue easy for you to write or not?
I think part of that is growing up in the South, there are a whole lot of colorful characters you come across and lots of colorful expressions. And so that's just always kind of ready in the back of your mind. And again, while characters aren't based on anybody in particular, but you know those expressions and you know that language and the dropping the G's and the just all of that. Dialogue comes easy for me. Plot not so much. Plot is a much tougher development for me because you know, like I said, I like happy stories. I like life in small town and happy things, but you know, people, you got to have something to keep the pages turning, and I don't want dead bodies laying around, so you know, you got to come up with some other kind of conundrums and issues to beef things up a little bit. So I spend a lot of time trying to say, okay, what could happen that would be believable that these people would naturally get into? It's not like Murder, She Wrote, you know, and every week the town loses another.
Well, you know, with things like Murder, She Wrote, after a while, I'd wonder, why would you be friends with her? Why would you invite her to come, you know, come and visit you in New Mexico or whatever? Because you know,
why would you have to move to that town? You know?
We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and talk with Jane more about process right after this word from our sponsor, Out West Shop.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
And And we're back, and welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer on LA Talk Radio. And by the way, when you go to outwestshop.com, you can find really cool shirts, kind of like the ones we're wearing. But use coupon code RADIO and save $10 off a purchase of $75 or more. We are having such a great time talking to Jane, aren't we?
It was fun.
So let's go ahead and explore a little bit more about process. You talked a moment ago about plot being somewhat challenging, although I have a feeling that characters come to you fairly, not quite with the same kind of challenge. Did these characters ever surprise you?
They did, and I can't, without revealing things, I didn't think that the romantic liaisons were going to turn out like they did. So that was a surprise, but you know, again, I don't know if you write yourself, but it's interesting that your characters kind of take on a life of their own, even after you created them and put them on the page and built all this, description around them. Sometimes they just kind of take off in a different direction and you just have to go with it.
We've heard that.
We've heard that. And are there some characters that you didn't anticipate including who suddenly were like knocking on your door saying, I want to be in this story? Did you have that at all?
No, Meg ended up playing a bigger role than I thought she would. And a different role than I thought she would.
Okay.
As I was shopping this book around, several of the agents that read the manuscript was like, I really don't like Meg.
Oh.
So you needed Meg.
This book needed Meg.
Well, again, you can't have, as my husband used to call it, the happy day scenario. You've got to have some conflict there. Yeah. And she provided a good opportunity for that. And again, we all know a Meg, it's like, I think these characters aren't based on specifics, but we all know people like these characters. And during the course of our life, you find the person that, nothing ever goes right for them, and you find the person that no matter what, they just dust themselves off and pick up and carry on.
You give them a little side background. As I remember, Meg is Pamela Anderson, right? As far as Pinky is concerned,
she looks like Pamela Anderson. People tell Meg that. And she's not sure whether that's a compliment or not.
Go ahead.
I just want to say, well, we talked about this last night and Thursday, but you have little cute little titles for each chapter. And I thought that one about the breakfast at the OK Corral will really fit that particular chapter.
Well, I thought it would be fun to take something familiar and just give it a twist. So it's like the... I think the first chapter, home again, jiggity jig, from the nursery rhyme. It's my party and I'll go berserk if I want to.
Yeah.
The wheels on the bus go round and round. It lends itself to using those. And so I had a lot of fun with the chapter titles. Plus, you want to leave people, when they turn the page, you want them to say, oh no, just one more chapter. Oh, I'll just read one more.
Oh, yes.
Exactly.
Well, and then I began to... try to anticipate. They were so clever. I'd be like, okay, so like the breakfast at the OK Corral, and we are pretty familiar with the OK Corral. Yeah. And I thought, oh, there's gonna be tension and bodies dropping in one way or another. But it's breakfast there. So what's happening at that meal?
No horses, some bodies dropping.
that was very fun. But speaking about that, did you have a different working title? And then as the chapter got written, you then figured out what to, what was first, chapter or title?
Yeah, the time of this when my friend and I first started this project was Mood Swing Manifesto. And there was a journal that Louise, the mother of the character CJ, she had kept a journal in her menopausal years. And so there was an excerpt at the beginning of every chapter. And at some point that just did not seem to work anymore. So ended up taking the journal still plays a role, but it's a different role. It's not as prominent as it once was. So, and my publisher is the one that said, I forget Mood Swing Manifesto. I think the title needs to be Alien the Hot Flashes. And I'm like, I'm in your face.
Continuing on a little bit about process, do you have a favorite place that you like to write in, writing corner?
On a daily basis, typically I'm sitting here in front of my computer writing, but my favorite place to write when I have the time and the opportunity, Carl Sandburg's house is about 45 minutes from my house, and his wife raised Nubian goats, and the National Historic Park now owns the estate, and they preserved the herd. So I take my little folding chair and I go up and I sit out in the woods after I pet the goats for a while, and I just sit out there and just write in the sunshine under the trees, watching those goats are the luckiest creatures on earth. What a life they have.
Oh, man.
It's just an absolute. Carl Sandburg was not my favorite poet by any means, but that is a sacred place. It is just so inspiring.
That's really interesting.
Do you do this every day, or is this kind of whenever you get a chance?
I try to spend my birthday up there every year, but I usually go up when I can at least once a month. Sometimes I take my grandchildren, so it's not always a quiet and peaceful visit. But when I can go up, my sister is a watercolor artist, and so and I have another friend who makes jewelry. And so we take our chairs and just sit out there and enjoy the solitude. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Where do you write at home? I assume you just write at home.
Right at this desk in front of my cabinet here. I've got all
just
my
like now. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you chase people away? Everybody, family has to leave. How do you work that out?
Well, my children are grown and have their own houses, so it's just my husband and me here. And he's an extrovert. I'm an introvert, so getting uninterrupted time is a challenge. I just kind of, if he's out working and doing stuff, then I have a few hours to myself. All right. Sometimes I'll write late at night. I'm not an early morning person, so. But just whenever the time comes, you had asked me earlier about writer's block.
Yes, writer's block.
And I don't. Writer's block is not something I've ever dealt with, and I don't know if that's because I write in so many different genres that if fiction nothing is flowing, then you work on poetry or you work on a blog post or a magazine article or something, and it's like. I find inspiration from so many different areas. Walking down the street, I'll see, a little old man or a woman who looks like, somebody just put her out of a car and, left her there with a suitcase. There are just so many things or nature. I'm sitting here with my window open. I hope the frogs are not overlapping into our microphone. But the nature, you see something amazing. There are two doves right now that just seem to constantly frolic in my front yard. And there's a poem coming from that, I feel sure.
Well, I know you enjoy gardening. On your Facebook page, you show quite a lot of fabulous pictures of gardens and now like tomatoes in the process of being taken care of for future recipes over the wintertime and such. Do you listen to music at all when you're writing?
No, when I'm writing. I listen to music a lot in other times, but when I'm writing, I like it to be quiet.
Okay.
So I can tell my thoughts can kind of percolate.
When you mentioned before about you might see, you mentioned a lady, with a piece of luggage who looks like she just got dropped off. How do you, Jane, how do you keep track of the those fleeting moments that you don't want to forget that could be an inspiration for a poem or a story? How do you keep track of those thoughts?
Safely out of view of the camera is a stack about this high. I have file folder after file folder of, I just jot things down. I never, I did keep a journal when I was younger, when I was raising the boys, because I thought, some of these are memories I'd like for them to know later on. But I really don't keep a writing journal as such. I just find a piece of paper and scratch the thought down and, you know, put it either in my deal with this immediately, deal with this someday. You know, you just don't want to lose this, Ben.
Okay. We are, we're going to take one more quick break. And this is an ad about Out West Shop's affiliate page at bookshop.org, where you can find all of Jane's books that we've been talking about tonight and all of the books of our upcoming guests. So let's take a listen to the Out West Bookshop ad. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Speaking with Jane Gaudin Ferrer. I'm trying to get a good job on that, Jane. I'll get it right here after a while. You know, we have a question. You know, I see you've had a few book signings at Barnes & Noble lately. Any advice on how to approach a bookstore, or a book club, a library offering, a book signing? Advice on how to organize and promote the event for success? In other words, it's probably maybe a little intimidating for some people to kind of do this kind of thing, or some of the writers, I mean.
Well, I have to tell you, as I said, I'm an introvert, so the marketing part of writing is so completely different from the creative part of writing. It's very difficult for me to get out and it's like, read my book, buy my book, you know, or what. So it's uncomfortable to do that. But it's all about making the connections and, you know, you just have to go into the stores and talk to the bookstore owners and, send out emails by the gazillions and, you know, and real live letters and so few people do that anymore. And finding the contacts, that there's a lot of research involved in being a writer, to find out, who does things. And it's like, for this book in particular, I went looking for publicity opportunities for middle-aged women, hand-lit, if you will. Mm-hmm. It's just amazing when you look to see that there are things out there, but you can't, you know, they're not readily available. They're not as visible as, you know, Google or Amazon or, you know, whatever. You have to go looking for those smaller venues. And those are the ones that typically will give the most attention. Not always, you know, bookstores, have budgets, have space constraints that, you know, so they're not always thrilled about trying to do a book signing, but as a rule, most bookstores are very receptive to doing something, particularly if you're a local author and you're in that area. And more I'm seeing that. I have a whole list of bookstore and gift shop addresses and contact information, and more I'm seeing that's kind of the niche that they're going after is, if you're a local author, you need to make friends with that bookstore so that they know who you are and what you're writing.
Mm-hmm. I think as we've come out of COVID, you know, congratulations on getting the book published in a non-COVID year, just published in June 8th of this year, because for all of the authors that we were talking with on the writer's block over the COVID years, you know, the challenge of who knew that it was going to hit and book festivals weren't happening quickly. Right. Zoom was beginning to be used and some author were making appearances through their favorite bookstore through yeah. Zooms. But oh my gosh, what that did to
really hard. Like my last book, Lift You Up and Make You Smile, I wasn't able to do any person-to-person publicity for that at all because nobody was doing events.
Right.
So, say, you know, there were no book festivals, nobody was trying, and, it, you know, that's a much harder, you know, if you don't have any way to promote it, it's hard to get it out there.
Yeah. What your publisher is a small town girl publishing. Yes. How did you connect with them?
It's a brand new imprint of Brother Mockingbird, which is
Okay.
And I never could find an agent who I got. You know, everybody loved the book, but they really hated Meg, or they loved the book, but they didn't like this. So I finally just, I read about a small town girl, and I thought, this sounds like it, you know, might be a good fit, because they're looking for things set in the 80s. And so I sent it to Small Town Girl, and I got an immediate response. Melissa Carrigy said, send me this manuscript. I want to read it. And we have just had the best time. They have been. I've worked with some major publishers in the past, but Small Town Girl has just been amazing to work with. They are so accessible and so professional, and just really have been with me every step of the way. I can't say enough good things.
That's
great. That's great.
That's really great. Let's see. I'm just looking at our clock. I can't believe that we're almost out of time. What are you working on now? What's next?
Well, right now I'm still focused on this book, doing the publicity and promotion for that. I have a little Christmas novella that I have finished, and I'm trying to find a home for that. Again, it's a small town. Mm-hmm. And again, interesting characters, I think, with the community, you know, diversity of male and female. Jim, there you go. I'm going to have some guy characters for you again.
And let's see, do you have any advice for new budding writers or poets?
You know, the biggest thing is to read everything that you can get your hands on, you know, in within the areas that you like to write, but also you need to read other things. I just finished reading The Lincoln Highway, which is not something the storyline is not something I would have thought of would appeal to me, but the writing was just phenomenal. And so, you know, you need to expose yourself outside your comfort zone sometimes to see what else is out there. Again, if there are writing organizations in the community, you should take advantage of those. Now, of course, since the advent of Zoom, there are a lot of online opportunities as well. So you don't have to actually physically, you know, be in whatever town to participate. And here in my area, the North Carolina Writers Network does all kinds of supportive activities and conferences and stuff. And again, I think in every state, there's a writing organization that should be able to provide some insights and mm-hmm. advice.
Mm-hmm. And how can people find you, follow you, buy your books? Where do we go?
My books should be available with bookshops through you and your out west. It's available, should be upon request from any bookstore or any of the online booksellers. And you can find me. I'm at, I have... My publisher, did they not want me to put JJ Ferrer on the cover, so you didn't have this whole huge handle out there, but I wanted the whole name. So it's www.janejadonferrer.com. I'm on Facebook at author Jane Jadon Ferrer. I'm on Instagram at Kamagoddess. I blog periodically at kamagoddess.blogspot.com. And then, of course, the poetry website is www.yourdailypoem.com.
Well, this has been fun.
It has been fun. Hasn't it?
We want to read anything you write, Jane. Could you be sure to always, you know, make sure you don't forget about us over here at Rendezvous with a Writer?
I will absolutely remember you. And you know, I appreciate you dressing for the occasion tonight.
Yeah, we don't yodel, we don't sing, we don't play any instruments, but we are huge fans of music of all genres, but Western and country are definitely on our hearts. So thank you so much for being with us. Thank you to everybody that was perhaps watching live on the LA Talk Radio Facebook page, or you've been listening live at latalkradio.com. Let me see. I'm looking over at my notes. Oh, and of course, we need to say thank you to Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio, to the Hot Texas Swing Band for providing tonight's music. And next week, September 1st, speaking about Western writing and also music, we have Jim Jones joining us. We'll be talking about his newest book, Halo Moon, and his newest album, Interesting Words and Music. And he's a good friend, and we're looking forward to hosting Jim. And let's see, this week's advice for writers is from author F. Scott Fitzgerald. You don't write because you want to say something. You write because you have something to say. On behalf of us here at Rendezvous with a Writer, till we meet again next week, we suggest you take a trip to your local library. We saw on Jane's website, her local library is now checking out fishing gear. You don't know what your local library could be offering. So do that this week. And until we meet again next week, remember, it's a great day out west.
Thank you, Jane.
You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.